Hello and welcome to Sound Body, a weekly program of information on health topics and ideas that can help you live life to its fullest. I'm Louise Craig. It is a dog's life. I know why that axiom is universally accepted amongst pet owners. We feed them, we play with them, walk them, and expect a little bit of affection in return. And in my opinion, they are lucky to often receive an assisted, painless death. And now it turns out there's a vaccine for dogs, but the one for humans is no longer given and the patent expired. I was thunderstruck by this. I live in a very rural setting in upstate New York, and we have more deer per acre than people by a long shot. I live in fear of ticks because I know too many people who have had a horrible time recovering from Lyme disease and the awful symptoms it produces. So today we're going to read about why the Lyme vaccine for humans no longer exists, what you can do to minimize your risk of contracting Lyme disease on your body and in your yard, and what symptoms to look out for. We are going to start with an article that was published on Vox, written by Brian Resnick, published May 7th, 2018, and titled, "The Incredibly Frustrating Reason There's No Lyme Disease Vaccine. Your dog can get vaccinated for Lyme, you cannot." Lyme has quickly become one of the most common infectious diseases in America, with as many as 300,000 people infected every year. And public health officials fear the bacterial infection, which jumps from ticks to humans, will only spread farther and faster as climate change makes more parts of the U.S. habitable for ticks. Lyme can be treated with antibiotics, and there are many ways to prevent tick bites. But there's no vaccine available if you want extra protection against the disease, unless you're a dog. Yet in the late 1990s and early 2000s, a vaccine called Lymerix was sold to prevent between 76 and 92% of infections. Hundreds of thousands of people got it until vaccine fear knocked it off the market. The Lymerix story is worth retelling today. It's a stark reminder of how anti-vaccine mania of the past few decades is leaving us all more susceptible to disease. Lyme first appeared in the U.S. seemingly out of nowhere, spreading between ticks and people in Connecticut. By the 1990s, it was possible to be infected with Lyme from a tick bite in much of the northeastern U.S., and there were around 15,000 confirmed cases a year. Today, there are more than 35,000 confirmed or probable cases of Lyme each year, and many more cases that go completely unreported. Recognizing the increasing public health hazard, the drug manufacturer SmithKline Beecham developed a vaccine that targeted the outer protein of the bacteria that causes Lyme. The Food and Drug Administration approved it in 1998. The vaccine worked by targeting the bacteria while it was still inside the tick's body, the website History of Vaccines explains. The bacteria would be neutralized before the tick ever had the chance to transfer the bacteria into the human body. Lymerix wasn't a perfect vaccine, as Gregory Poland, a Mayo Clinic vaccine researcher, explained in a 2011 retrospective in the journal Clinical Infectious Diseases. It required 3 doses over the course of the year and was not approved for people under age 15. It was optional, and doctors had a hard time assessing whom to recommend it to. There were few maps of Lyme-carrying ticks range at the time. And the vaccine only protected against the North American strain of Lyme. Finally, it was somewhat expensive at $50 a dose, and it was not universally covered by health insurance. But it was effective, preventing Lyme in up to 90% of the people who were vaccinated with all 3 doses, with few side effects. And at first, the vaccine was pretty popular. About 1.5 million doses were injected before 2000. Lymerix had the misfortune of being approved the same year some people were becoming suspicious of vaccines in the U.S., In 1998, the journal Lancet published a now-retracted study that falsely claimed the measles, mumps, and rubella vaccine, MMR, was linked to autism, and the modern anti-vax movement was born. At the same time, a few members of the FDA panel that approved Lymerix had voiced a theoretical concern that the drug could cause an autoimmune reaction leading to arthritis. The idea was that as the immune system learned to attack the protein that covered the Lyme bacteria, it could overreact and start to attack healthy tissue in the body. This side effect didn't occur in the clinical trial. It was just a hypothetical possibility. The FDA panel eventually unanimously approved the drug, but the fear of an autoimmune reaction trickled down to the public. What happened next was a perfect storm to drive the product from the market. A 2000 study found the vaccine contributed to autoimmune arthritis in hamsters. Other research posited, but didn't prove, that it was possible some people were more genetically predisposed to develop this type of autoimmune response in reaction to the vaccine. Sure enough, some Lymerix recipients soon began to complain publicly that the drug was causing them to develop joint pain. National news media were reporting on the concerns, casting them in a harrowing light. In 2000, ABC News told the story of a man who fell ill with a fever and an intense hellish pain after taking the vaccine. The FDA looked into the claims, but never found a connection between the vaccine and arthritis. By 2001, 1.4 million doses of the vaccine had been distributed, but the FDA's Vaccine Adverse Events Reporting System only picked up on 59 reports of arthritis. The arthritis incidence in the patients receiving Lyme vaccine occurred at the same rate as the background in unvaccinated individuals, a 2007 paper in Epidemiology and Infection explains. Overall, FDA's VAERS only picked up on 905 reports of any adverse side effects at all, a tiny amount compared to the number of people who had gotten the shots. But it was too late. Already, there was significant media coverage, sensationalism, the development of anti-Lyme vaccine groups, who urged withdrawal of the vaccine from the market, Poland explained in his 2011 article. A class action lawsuit targeted Smith, Kline, and Beecham, claiming the company did not do enough to warn people of potential autoimmune side effects. The FDA continued to follow up with an additional drug safety trial to try to settle the matter for the public. The trial was supposed to last 4 years, but sales of Lymerix had plummeted from about 1.5 million doses in 1999 to a projected 10,000 doses in 2002, the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases explains on its website. So, the manufacturer pulled it from the market, despite the fact that early data from the additional safety trial found no differences in any significant adverse reactions noted between control subjects and vaccinated persons, Poland writes. Concerning side effects sometimes do emerge after a drug comes on the market, but you need hard data to establish them, and the FDA's investigations into Lymerix never found any evidence of autoimmune side effects. Although studies never adequately substantiated the safety concerns associated with Lymerix, the Epidemiology and Infection article states, the decline in public tolerance for risk and uncertainty, combined with the relatively low morbidity of Lyme disease, contributed to the inability of the vaccine to find a market niche. In 2000s, Lyme still didn't infect that many people, and the public was more concerned about the Lyme vaccine than the disease itself. But now, infection rates are rising, and we're left without a crucial tool to stop its spread. As Julia Boulotz reported at Vox, Lyme cases tripled between 2004 and 2016, spread by an increased number of infected ticks. It's now the most common vector-borne, i.e. transmitted by an insect or animal, disease in the United States. And climate change seems to be partly to blame. As temperatures warm, a greater proportion of the U.S. becomes hospitable to the ticks. Overall, vector-spread diseases like chikungunya, Zika, and West Nile are spreading faster than ever. And still, if you wanted to protect yourself with a Lyme disease vaccine, you couldn't get one. As Balutz explained, prevention efforts currently focus on avoiding tick bites. That means covering up exposed skin when spending time in wooded areas, using insect repellent, and checking your body for ticks and removing them after you've spent time outdoors in tick-laden areas. WBUR in Boston reports there have been some small efforts to revive Lymerix. Its patent has now expired. But the pharmaceutical industry has lost interest in it, and grassroots efforts have gone unfunded. The Lyme vaccine for dogs works in a similar manner to Lymerix. But while it does help control the spread of the disease, it doesn't make up for the lack of a vaccine in humans. Low demand for the vaccine and its subsequent withdrawal from the market represent a loss of a powerful tool for Lyme disease prevention, the authors of the Epidemiology and Infection article state. For many, symptoms last months, leading to painful arthritis, heart problems, and nerve pain. Though Lyme is treatable, it needs to be diagnosed early for people to avoid its worst symptoms. A vaccine would provide a greater margin of error if a tick bite goes unnoticed. Unscientific anti-vaccine movements leave us all more unsafe down the line. We see examples of this in the news all the time. Diseases long controlled by vaccines like measles are now starting to pop back up in concerning numbers. In Japan, vaccination rates for HPV vaccine plummeted in recent years due to fear-mongering. Vaccines can be a hard sell because people need to take them when they're healthy, and no vaccine has zero risk of side effects. But when we take a vaccine, we're not just protecting ourselves, we're protecting those around us and ensuring a less infected future. The Lymerix vaccine was optional, and anti-vaccine fears have left millions without the option to take it at all. A French company is developing a new Lyme vaccine, New Scientist reports. It would protect against the different strains of Lyme that circulate worldwide, but it's just getting out of phase one safety trials, which means it would be many years before it arrives on the market if proven safe. We can't count on having a vaccine anytime soon, but we can count on more ticks coming our way. I've taken this next from the Mayo Clinic website, and it was updated last on May 16th, 2018. And this is a list of the symptoms and signs of Lyme disease. Early signs and symptoms: a small red bump often appears at the site of a tick bite or tick removal and resolves over a few days. This is normal after a tick bite and does not indicate Lyme disease. However, these signs and symptoms may occur within a month after you've been infected. Rash: from 3 to 30 days after an infected tick bite, an expanding red area might appear that sometimes clears in the center, forming a bullseye pattern. The rash expands slowly over days and can spread to 12 inches across. It is typically not itchy or painful. Erythema migrans is one of the hallmarks, that's the rash, the bullseye, of Lyme disease. Some people develop this rash at more than one place on their bodies. Flu-like symptoms, fever, chills, fatigue, body aches, and a headache may accompany the rash. Later signs and symptoms. If untreated, new signs and symptoms of Lyme infection might appear in the following weeks to months. These include erythema migrans appearing in other areas of your body. Joint pain: bouts of severe joint pain and swelling are especially likely to affect your knees, but the pain can shift from one joint to another. Neurological problems: weeks, months, or even years after infection, you might develop inflammation of the membranes surrounding your brain, meningitis, temporary paralysis of one side of your face, Bell's palsy, numbness or weakness in your limbs, and impaired muscle movement. Signs and symptoms caused by the bacterium Borrelia myoni may also include nausea and vomiting. Diffuse rashes, rather than a single bullseye rash commonly associated with Lyme disease. Less common signs and symptoms: several weeks after infection, some people develop heart problems, such as an irregular heartbeat. Heart problems rarely last more than a few days or weeks. Eye inflammation, liver inflammation, and severe fatigue. When to see a doctor? If you've been bitten by a tick and have symptoms. Only a minority of black-legged tick bites leads to Lyme disease. The longer the tick remains attached to your skin, the greater your risk of getting the disease. Lyme infection is unlikely if the tick is attached for less than 36 to 48 hours. If you think you've been bitten and have signs and symptoms of Lyme disease, particularly if you live in an area where Lyme disease is prevalent, contact your doctor. Treatment for Lyme disease is more effective if begun early. It's important to consult your doctor even if signs and symptoms disappear. The absence of symptoms doesn't mean the disease is gone. Left untreated, Lyme disease can spread to other parts of your body from several months to years after infection, causing arthritis and nervous system problems. Ticks can also transmit other illnesses such as babesiosis and Colorado tick fever. Which is why we want to go to the next article, How to Protect Yourself from Mosquitoes and Ticks. This was written by Roni Karen Rabin on May 1st, 2018 for the New York Times. Just when you thought it was warm enough to venture outdoors again, health officials are warning that the number of Americans infected by mosquito, tick, and flea bites has more than tripled in recent years. Tick-borne diseases like Lyme and Rocky Mountain spotted fever have been increasing in the Northeast, Upper Midwest, and California, and mosquitoes may be carrying West Nile virus and, in some parts of the U.S., Zika. The only flea-borne disease is plague, but it, thankfully, is extremely rare. There's no magic pill or vaccine to prevent disease infections, but you can take steps to protect yourself and your family from bites, and it all starts with awareness, physicians and consumer advocates say. Recognize that this is a problem that's worthy of your time and attention, said Dorothy Leland, director of communications for LymeDisease.org, a patient advocacy organization. This is one concern in life that's preventable by following some simple guidelines, so it's worth taking precautions, said Dr. David Weber, a professor of medicine and medical director of UNC Hospital's Departments of Epidemiology and Occupational Health Service. Here are measures you can take, some of which provide two-for-one protection against both ticks and mosquitoes. Cover up, even when it's hot out. Build a protective shield around yourself, Ms. Leland recommends. If you're going hiking in tick country, wear long pants, long sleeves, shoes, and socks, and tuck your pants into your socks to avoid any exposed skin around the ankles. Wear a hat and a bandana around your neck to cover up even more skin. If you have long hair, pull it back into a ponytail or braids. Consider purchasing clothing that has been pre-treated with the insecticide permethrin, which repels both ticks and mosquitoes, though it may be less effective against ticks. Just spraying closed shoes with permethrin can be effective, Ms. Leland suggested. There are studies that show that just protecting your feet can do an amazing job against ticks because they tend to be low to the ground, so their entry point is that they often climb up on your shoes and keep going and get to your skin, she said. Mind where you're going and avoid areas that are especially attractive to ticks, like tall grassy fields, said Dr. Weber. Ticks don't fly and they don't jump, Dr. Weber said. They live on grasses, and when a human goes by, they leave the grass and attach themselves to the human. He recommends staying in the center of a trail when walking in the woods and avoiding bushy areas and grasslands. Avoid sitting on downed logs where ticks like to nestle, Ms. Leland said. Use insect repellent on exposed skin. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention and the Environmental Protection Agency recommend using mosquito repellents that have as their active ingredient either DEET, picaridin, IR3535, oil of lemon eucalyptus, OLE, or paramethanediol, PMD, or 2-undecanone. Only DEET, picaridin, and IR3535 are effective agents against ticks and will require higher concentrations than when used against mosquitoes. So read the package labels carefully and reapply as needed. Adults should apply repellent to children, but not to very young infants, Dr. Weber said. Babies under 2 months should not use repellents, and OLE and PMD should not be used on children under 3. For all children, avoid putting repellents on their hands or near their eyes and mouths. If you're also using sunscreen, apply the sunscreen first and then the mosquito repellent afterward. Check yourself for ticks after a hike. Take a shower after your hike and check yourself for ticks. Make sure to feel your scalp under your hair and check folds of skin, your private parts, behind your ears and behind your knees. Parents should check their children, and adults should have someone else check their backs. Look in your clothes for ticks, Dr. Weber suggested, and throw them in the dryer on high heat if you're concerned. Do a full body check by looking in a mirror and check hidden spots. Behind the knees, the waist area, the belly button, that's where they like to hide. Showering may wash away ticks that are riding on you, but if you find a tick that's embedded in the skin, use pointy tweezers to remove it. Grasp it and pull it straight out slowly but firmly, Ms. Leland advised. And don't forget to check your dogs when they come in from outside, taking care to protect yourself while you're checking them. Dogs, particularly those with long hair, can be a magnet for ticks, Ms. Leland said. Mosquitoes breed in fresh water and can reproduce in as little as a bottle cap full of water, so rid your yard and deck of empty flower pots, bird baths, or bowls where water can accumulate. If you keep a dog's water bowl outside, empty and refresh it frequently. Make sure your window screens are intact. It doesn't take a very big hole to let mosquitoes in, Dr. Weber said. Practice defensive gardening to make your yard inhospitable to ticks. Use fencing to keep out deer that carry ticks. Prune trees, keep the grass cut short by mowing often. Clear leaves and remove overgrowth from the outdoor areas you use the most. Depending on where you live, you may want to use sprays as well. Check your local, state, or county health department website to learn more about local conditions. And we have, lastly, tick-proof your yard without spraying. And this comes from Consumer Reports, written by Paul Hope, and was last updated on May 9, 2018. This year is expected to be one of the worst on record for ticks, and not just in the Northeast. At least one variety of disease-transmitting tick has been found in all of the lower 48 states, according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. And a lab at Cornell University has identified 26 species of ticks along the East Coast alone, far more than the deer ticks most of us associate with Lyme disease. With a little bit of work, including cutting your grass more often, you can rid your yard of the pests. Tick control is mostly about wildlife, says Judy Gangloff-Kaufman, coordinator of New York State's Integrated Pest Management Program at Cornell. If you have an open yard where animals can enter, you're almost certainly going to have ticks. One way to know for sure? Perform what's called a tick drag. Cut a 5-inch square swatch of fabric and tie it to an 18-inch long pole or stick. Holding the pole, drag the fabric along tall grass or weeds, particularly near a woodland edge of your lawn. Ticks will typically transfer themselves to the swatch. If the trial confirms their presence, you'll need to deal with the problem now to safely enjoy your yard. If not, it could pay to be proactive. Follow these 5 steps to deal with them effectively. 1, keep your grass short. Black-legged ticks, the type that transmit Lyme, don't like dry, hot environments. Because taller blades of grass cast a shadow and create shade, leaving your lawn a little shaggy is a bad idea in tick-rich areas. Gangloff-Kaufman says you're still okay to let your grass reach the 4 to 4.5 inches Consumer Reports recommends, but be vigilant about keeping up with mowing. Letting grass grow that tall, then trimming it down to about 3 inches, promotes healthy growth. Shearing your grass to 1 inch to 2 inches sends grass into a panic, and it grows too tall too fast with a weak root structure. If you miss a week and the grass gets tall, it's a good idea to use the bagging attachment with your tractor or lawnmower, because leaving those long lawn clippings behind can create the perfect environment for ticks. 2, make a mulch moat. Many tick varieties favor the dense cover of woodlands over open lawn. That makes any wooded areas adjacent to your property potential hotbeds for ticks. Adding a 3-foot-wide barrier of mulch around the perimeter of your yard does double duty. First, it creates a physical barrier that's dry and sometimes hot, something ticks can't tolerate. Second, it serves as a visual reminder to anyone in your household to be especially careful once they step past the perimeter. For the border, you want mulch made from broad, dry wood chips or bark, not the damp, shredded variety, which creates exactly the kind of cool, damp conditions ticks love. Three, trim tall grass and weeds. Ticks like to climb to the top of tall grass blades and look for questing opportunities, the chance to grab onto animals like deer or humans. By keeping grass and weeds at bay with a string trimmer, you'll minimize those chances and make it more difficult for ticks to latch onto you. Number four, eliminate tick habitat. Consumer Reports has long advocated for mulching grass clippings when you mow. That's because these clippings break down and release nitrogen into the soil, feeding your yard and potentially reducing the amount of fertilizer you use by about 20%. And in many instances, it's okay or even preferable to leave behind fallen leaves to nourish the lawn for the same reason. But if you live in an area with a large tick population, it's worth reconsidering. By bagging grass and blowing leaves into piles for collection, you keep your yard clear and cut back on tick-friendly places. And lastly, we have consider a targeted approach. Following the four steps above will make your yard less inviting to ticks, but if you want to make a serious dent in the number of ticks on your property, you'll need to focus on methods that kill them. Many people opt for spraying their entire yard with pesticide, an approach that Consumer Reports experts say is both ineffective and potentially dangerous. Instead, consider products that treat the fur of mice or deer with small quantities of tick-killing agents. One example is a new product that consists of cardboard tubes stuffed with cotton treated with permethrin, a tick-killing chemical. Mice collect the cotton and take it back to their nests. The permethrin binds to oils on their fur, killing any ticks that try to attach without harming the mice. Mice play an important role in the transmission cycle of Lyme disease, explains Laura Goodman, Senior Research Associate in Cornell's Department of Population Medicine and Diagnostic Sciences. They have found that such systems have resulted in statistically meaningful drops in tick levels after several years of use, and at about $4 per tube, they're cheaper than tick bait boxes. Thank you for tuning in to Sound Body today. Keep those ticks off of you and come back next week for more healthy living ideas. This has been Sound Body, a production of WXXI Reach Out Radio in Rochester, New York. I'm Louise Craig, and I hope you'll join me again next week for more health updates and information for healthy living. If you'd like to hear this program again, you can download a podcast of the show at our website, wxxi.org.